Let's turn to the last presentation of our segment of the workshops this afternoon. This will be from Kim Rubstein from the Department of Theater and Dance. Kim.
I have absolutely nothing to show you up here. I have me to talk to you. I have my voice and my embodied being, and I'm going to actually talk to you about embodying the creative mind. I'm a theater director, a professional theater director who's directed all over the country and also internationally. I've directed in San Diego at the Globe Theater, La Jolla Playhouse, sort of, and also at San Diego Rep. And I've been teaching acting and directing for over 30 years. I teach here, I've taught at Northwestern, I've taught internationally. So I think I know a great deal about creativity and about training creativity. The thing that's so interesting about theater or training actors is that I think that there is a general idea that an actor wears a mask, that an actor is trained to wear the costumes and masks of other people. But truly, the training of an actor is the training of the authentic self. It is the training of stripping away all of the masks that we wear in everyday life so that we can come back to our original instrument. Actors, the instrument of an actor is their instrument, and it is important that when we train it, it is first unclogged, like a good saxophone or a good Stradivarius must be. And then we train to attune and to tune ourselves and our sensitivities. We tune our observation sensitivities so that we are able to observe deeply and exquisitely, like a scientist, human behavior. We learn to view, observe, and then take on human behavior and gesture both externally, and we learn to step in to the hearts and the souls, if I can say that word in an academic environment, of the characters that we inhabit. We also learn very much about how to make our senses openly available in what I call six directions, like a martial artist, to receive the world prismatically, so that we are receiving not just through our eyes, which we've become very adept at, particularly with computers and technology, but that we are receiving with all of our senses, including our skin pores, what I call the sensory portals that take us from our interiority or interoception to our exteroception, or the ability to receive the exterior field into ourselves and allow ourselves to be changed. That is actually a great deal of training. It is not only about learn your lines, step over there, and emote a lot. However, emotional presence is extremely important for the actor, and emotional presence becomes an increasingly difficult thing to allow in this society, to allow people to be right where they are in their emotional moment, and to be able to be a compassionate receiver of the moment that another human being is in without scurrying to stamp it down like it's some emergency fire. When my colleague and I, whose name is Lisa Porter, and she is actually the head of stage management in the theater department, so she is really in many ways opposite to me in what she does. She's there to contain and organize the wilderness of my wild creative mind. And we have this fantastic relationship because she brings out the structure in me and I bring out the wilderness in her. We work together on a class that's called Cultivating the Creative Mind that we have taught twice and we are now teaching this quarter again. It is a class that has been that we became interested in as soon as we heard about the concept of neuroplasticity, which was a very exciting concept, which I'm sure you've all been talking about. The idea that the brain can change in response to experience over your whole lifetime. And I know that what we do in the theater is experiential. It is with our minds and our bodies, and is with the bridge in between, which may be our necks, or it may be our brain stems. We learn to explore and to analyze human behavior from both angles. So once we heard about neuroplasticity, we embarked on this research project to study current neuroscience on the creative brain in order to create a systematic training for the creative mind, integrating theater practices with our findings. We had the super objective of developing a new curriculum for the class called Cultivating the Creative Mind. We began with two burning questions. Can creativity and compassion be taught? Is it possible for artists to think, feel, and respond more like scientists, and scientists to think, feel, and respond more like artists? Armed with the concept of neuroplasticity and our adventurous, if possibly romantic, notion that the integration of cognitive science and theater techniques might synthesize into a new space, a third space, where the training of our creative minds could be embodied. This quarter, our class has 35 students in it from across campus. They're undergraduates. They're from all disciplines. We meet 3 times a week. We wanted our class to also embody the idea that we were not just training the mind, but we were training the body and the body-mind. So we have a Monday class that is a lecture. It is a traditional pedagogical class. We have a Wednesday class that is called the Brain Lab, which is a small group. And in the small groups, they are given prompts and there is discussion. And sometimes there is like a wandering around kind of prompt. The third class, which is the most inventive, is a 2-hour body or embodied lab, which we do in the dance building, in which the students actually practice training the creative mind. Lisa and I have isolated 10 different facets of the creative mind. I did not want to put them up here yet because they're still being fashioned, but they include things like awareness, liminality, the catalytic, focus, synthesis, equilibrium, and we train each one of those very specifically, using both new techniques and techniques that we have used through our 30-plus years of experience in training theater artists. We don't do plays. People don't play characters. But we are working on training the senses to be more exquisite. And first and foremost, we are training the self, the individual self, to remember itself. Almost done. Ken Robinson, who you all know is a great educator. He has spoken quite length about how he believes that part of the trouble in our society is that we are disenfranchised and disconnected from ourselves. That if we are to have compassion with others, if we are to change the increasing violence that young people are really doing towards other people, then we first have to come back to ourselves. We have to know ourselves. So we begin in the brain class to work on our relationship to self, which Antonio Damasio, who is the neuroscientist we often work with, calls the proto-self first, which is the primal and I guess the original self. The self before language, the self before anything from the exterior field came in to change us. We work on coming back to that original self. We work on then the core self, which Damasio speaks of as the self that the sensory portals are in pure relationship to exterior stimuli. peer relationship, meaning there is not indexing, there isn't categorizing, it is just pure reception. And then we work on the autobiographical self, the stories of who we are, our content affinities, what we're attracted to, and how we take those attractions and have a true encounter with them, or what Einstein might call a spooky entanglement, which means that we are not only entangled with the subject outside of us, but our heart beats along with it, and we are an alchemy can be made. Alchemy is a great deal, for me, a part of what makes creativity possible. It is the mystery that is between the spaces that we understand. That is liminality, and we train for that. We train to be able to stay in the mystery as we begin to understand more and more about the bones of things. My last comment, creativity and compassion take real courage in today's technological, social media-addicted world. Until we are willing to get truly lost in the unknown in a full-bodied, wholehearted way, new idea spaces and creative leaps that heal the broken humanity that we are in will remain undiscovered. Courage derives from the French word cœur, the heart. Embodied training of the mind-body revives our humanity and our creativity, beginning in our interior pulse, the one and only jazz beat of our very own unique hearts. The seed of creation begins there and holds within it the beat of something brand new and useful to the world.
That was very special, Kim. We do have some time for questions, but I just want to say right off the bat, I wish I were a student in the Culture of the Creative Mind course. This seems like a dynamite course. Ralph.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. I'm really curious to know, how are the students responding?
It's fascinating. And the last time we taught it, which was 2 years ago, we had 42 students. There is a great deal of this at the beginning, particularly in the body lab. But what the work is actually at first just about patterning and repatterning. It's simple, just walking. You know, nobody has to grow into a tree or anything. And in the end, there's been a tremendous response. The evaluations are fantastic. Many students have said they think this class should be taught to every undergraduate who comes into UCSD or any college, so that they are able to receive the classes that they have with in a more fully embodied way that comes also from their own specialness.
Other questions for Kim? Yes, over here, Bill McGinnis.
I'm a geneticist, so I'm interested in deviations from the norm. And so I just wonder, it relates to a couple different things that were discussed, empathy and stories. I wonder whether autistic children or autistic humans appreciate stories and movies. And the second question is whether there are autistic animals, dogs.
I love that you talk about the autistic, because one of the Lisa Porter, my colleague, has an autistic daughter, and in our first, which is one of the reasons she was interested in doing this class, and in our first class there was a high levelly functioning autistic student taking the class. I have actual, not just footage of her in the class, but also a document that she wrote after the class was over about how much it changed her. She started the class unable to go near anybody, or we stand in group. There's a lot of collaboration. She couldn't stand in the circle, and she wasn't able to. We hold on to our hearts, and she wasn't able to touch herself or anybody else. And in the course of there's this one very beautiful day where we were working on something, and the class actually had a lot of emotional presence. And we have a close-up of her beginning to cry. And she went into the bathroom and got a bunch of Kleenex and started passing it out to everybody and actually hugged somebody. So it was a very big deal for her. Again, I think a lot of it comes from starting with self. We talk about compassion, and I love that. But I think it's so important that we first have compassion for ourselves. And every single person in this class learns to name themselves, to name their presence, to name their affinities, and to also be received, open-heartedly for that, without a lot of, like, are you kidding? You like Madonna? Do you know what I mean? It is, and she was received for who she was, and I think that made a very big difference for her ability to be in the group.